Hey folks, this is John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I record right here in my vehicle. Well, at least I did before COVID. Now I record at home on walks, in my house, in my neighborhood, trying to figure out what's next as we grapple with the very real possibility of entering the great unknown for the fall of 2020 and beyond. Each week we talk about teaching related things, new episodes every Monday. If you want to talk further, I'm on Twitter at MeehanEDU, and I will gladly hang out with you. I tell my students I have no life and no friends, so let's hang out and let's talk about teaching. And today we're talking all about the power of failure and these very real failures that we've all encountered in this time of COVID, in this time of shutdown. I'm just trying to figure out just how we put it back together before we figure out what this looks like for the fall, if this looks like for the fall. And I think there's a great quote from Dwight Eisenhower. He says he finds that planning is essential, but plans are useless. There's a German general, I think from World War I, he said something along the lines of, no plan survives an encounter with the enemy and remains intact. And I like this idea of planning and then replanning and doing it all over again, sort of rebuilding ourselves. So that's what today's podcast is about. But if you want to hang out on Twitter, like I said, MeehanEDU, if you want to like the podcast, new episodes every Monday, just leave a click, leave a like, comment or subscribe. That's awesome. And if you want to have more resources, templates, whatever you like, I have a website. It's www.adrenalinerush.com. That's adrenaline with an E, like educational ed, adrenaline. Adrenaline Rush is also the name of my book, which is all about game-changing student engagement, inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. So, all right, let's change the game. Today, failure. Eisenhower, right? Planning is essential and plans are useless. How much does that ring true in this time of COVID, in this time of shutdown, in this coronavirus pandemic where every plan you made, it seems like it changed 5 minutes. I know for myself, personally and professionally, I'm going to keep it as professional as I can today. I've encountered a bunch of frustrating professional setbacks in this planning and failure. As everything was starting, the very, very start of the pandemic, I was in the car repair shop because I noticed my check engine light had come on. And I said, all right, well, here we go. If we're going to have a pandemic, in my head, I didn't know how long a pandemic would last. I was like, at the very least, I need a vehicle that could get me out of town if I needed to, right? To see loved ones, family members, go to the grocery store, whatever it happened to be. So my pandemic planning started with, let's make a new plan and get the car where it needed to be. I was there for what I thought was an oil change and a very quick, tighten things up, whatever it was, do the works. After 2-3 hours waiting there, this is the day the pandemic started. It was on a Monday. I was supposed to be at my house leading a training at like noon. And I went in at 7 a.m. for the car repair. At like 10 or 11, they came out and they said, all right, Mr. Meehan, I want to talk to you about options. I'm like, options? Options about my car? It's an oil change. There should be no options. Change the oil. And they're like, yeah, it's a lot of money to fix it. And it's like, oh man, how's that for starting a pandemic, right? You're looking at the possibility of, I had this vehicle bought and paid for, 10 years old, 150,000 miles, and now there's very real likelihood that I have to pay more money to fix it than I would to even, if I could resell it. So man, what a start to a pandemic for me that was. And that was a kind of kick to the gut, realizing I had to make that decision in like a 15-minute window because I had to get back to my house at noon. And I was like, just button it back up. I'll figure it out later. What a nightmare, right? What a way to start things off. Of course, at 7 a.m., you're also getting all the news about all these things that are shutting down, 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. And quietly and slowly but surely, I'm like, uh-oh, talking about panics and pandemics. Now every conference I was supposed to go to over the next 2-3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, were starting to shut down. The likelihood of out-of-state travel was shutting down. The likelihood of very large presentations, both in and out-of-state, were shutting down. Even if I could drive there, the schools wouldn't be open because one by one by one, they all started to fall and make these announcements. And it's like, oh no. So in addition to my car now needing to be fixed, which cost a ton of money, my business, whatever my business is, which is, teaching, is not going to happen the way I thought it was going to happen. And then that side hustle of, and I also do trainings and stuff. Whoops, one by one. Now they all started to dry up as well. And in the course of that day, I think I had like 8 different gigs canceled. And it was, part of it was preemptive. Like, hey, we don't know what this is going to look like. So for the time being, we're just going to bag it. Other ones are like, okay, we're going to punt this down the road. We'll talk further as we get closer to it. Fine. But if each of those things even pay a few bucks, and I'm talking like very, very small returns when you talk about what it costs to fly to a place, lodge at a place, travel to that place, eat in that place, and then come back. I mean, you make a few hundred bucks by the time it's all said and done. It's not like you're swimming in it. Because I am still a working classroom teacher. I'm like, well, I guess that ends that. So one by one by one, those few hundred bucks add up. And you're like, and that is the next 6 months of my life. No money, no side hustle, right? No extra income. So it's like, oh, okay, I'll just devote myself to my hobbies and, you know, work and blah, 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 blah. I also found out that Tom Brady had ended his career with the New England Patriots after my entire, like, last 20 years of my life. So I was like, oh, man, this could not get any worse, talking about failures. But I was like, it's okay. I'm actually working on another book. So I was really excited about that. And I was like, I'm going to throw myself at it. And then immediately in wake of COVID stuff, I was like, even if this book comes out, this book would be 18 months from when you, like, kind of start the process to when it ultimately makes its way through the process. And that's if it even gets optioned or picked up by the publishers. I was like, well, let's look at how this holds up in light of COVID. And I was about 3 or 4 chapters into what would have been about a 10-chapter book. So I have like 20,000 words of a 50,000-word manuscript. And I'm like, okay, I've been working on this for a minute. I could just hunker down and get it done. I was really proud of this. And I looked at it and I was like, yeah, this doesn't age well. In light of COVID, there are so many new questions to ask. And there are so many new things that become everyday realities. Very small example, which was not from the book, but just like as a life thing. As a teacher who uses manipulatives a lot, whether you're using like blocks in your classroom or Legos, bricks, or, you know, things that students will just, you know, come into contact with their hands. If students are sharing things with their hands in a time where touching things with their hands and hand washing and hand sanitizing is like a big deal, we can't do that. And if you have parts of your book or entire chapters of your book dedicated to using manipulatives effectively, you're like, whoop, I either have to pull the chapter or I have to rewrite it considerably to talk about digital manipulatives as well. And it's like, oh man, but writing is rewriting, right? Every plan that comes in contact with the enemy does need a little bit of restructuring. So I think about these things and I was like, wow, maybe I'll just like do some stuff for fun, some like leisure writing, some leisure reading. And I tried to do the best of those things I could to kind of keep sane through the pandemic. I took part in some social justice things, which are a big piece of my heart. So like taking part in the marches here in Washington, D.C. and the demonstrations for speaking out against racial injustice, the Black Lives Matter things. I think that was awesome. But that's tough too, because for every part of these marches and these demonstrations we're taking part in, and again, I don't do it for political reasons. I do it for matters of human dignity and social justice. It is not a experiment where you march Monday, laws are changed on Tuesday, racism is gone on Wednesday, right? So you don't really know what that plan looks like. All you can do is keep pushing and keep pushing. And unfortunately, it doesn't grow in a very linear like trajectory where you're like, okay, I can see signs of growth and progress and change. At first, it seemed like everybody in the news was covering it. It was a big, big deal. And that was amazing. It was like, okay, we are doing it. We're changing the world over the course of a weekend. And then like 3 weeks later, it's out of the news cycle, even though the underlying issues are pretty much there. And we've changed the names of a band or two. We've changed the name of a football squad. But we've not really fixed this broader, deeper issue of systemic racism and injustice. And though it is great to see those small signs, those positive signs, like, okay, these are gains. I wasn't marching so that the Dixie Chicks would change their name, right? I wasn't watching so the Washington Football would change their football team name. I was marching to end systemic oppression of people who are of different races than myself. And I don't think that the Dixie Chicks were doing much of that. I think it's a small piece of it, but I don't think it was all of it. So all of those things said, it's like, oh man, so what am I doing with my free time? How am I moving this forward? How am I adapting and overcoming and changing things, right? You know, I was even working on some short fiction pieces just for fun, you know, just as a thing to do, as a hobby, not to make money off of, just whatever. And I submitted a few of them to different places, either different writers groups or beta readers or online magazines, you know, publications to kind of get published. And one by one, you know, those rejections kind of pile up too. And you're like, darn it. Like, what have I accomplished today? If I were laying bricks or if I were fixing motorcycles, I could look at the motorcycle in my garage or the pile of bricks in my yard and say, well, it used to be this big and now it's that big. Or that motorcycle used to be this fixed and now it's that fixed. I think the challenge as an educator is to maintain positivity and maintain perspective in light of all of these setbacks, in light of all of these failures and frustrations, because one by one by one, they start to pile up and you say to yourself, what am I I doing? How am I making this any better? So I happen to, again, through all of this, to kind of bring things to a close and to a point, I promise there's a point to this week, I was struck by the book Reality is Broken by Jane McGonigal. I was giving that a read again this week, and I was struck by her idea of when she was recovering from a concussion, she sort of gamified her concussion recovery with a game that she made. It's not a computer game, it's a web bank game, it's not even a board game, it's just like a let's play a car game with friends kind of game. The rules are very simple. The game was called Super Better, and in Super Better, she envisioned herself as Jane the Concussion Slayer, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She enlisted the help of some friends, you know, who is your Willow, who is your Xander, who are the people in your life that kind of round out your cast of characters. What are your hero's abilities, their powers, right? What type of things would be your power-ups that you can get from your friends to collect over the course of 2, 3, or 4, you know, weeks or months as you're kind of working through it? And what sort of things are the bad guys? I like this as a conceit, you know, like, if you are Wolverine from the X-Men, okay, then your power is superhuman healing. Amazing. So who are your X-Men? Who are the people who round out your cast of characters? Who's your Professor X? You know, who's the person who gives you wisdom? Who's your Rogue? The person who gives you a little bit of courage, maybe a little bit of, you know, permission to break the rules. Who's your Jean Grey? Maybe your love interest who you're reaching out to and you just need some empathy from. Who's the Scott Summers in your life? The Cyclops who, okay, he's a professional rival, but you know what? He is good at his job. You just do it a different way than he does. So you kind of butt heads. And the idea is if you see yourself as this character, enlisting the help of these other people with the idea of, hey, can you shoot me daily affirmations or weekly challenges, like, for things that I can do? Example, if you're recovering from a concussion and one of your friends says, hey, I'm your fitness trainer, right? I'm your Professor X making you smarter. Your brain won't get smarter unless you make your brain physically prepared for endurance challenges. So try today to complete the New York Times crossword puzzle and give me a shout when you get that. And you just get these messages from them. It actually means more because it comes from somebody else. It's a challenge from another person and a chance to come back to it and say, hey, afterwards, okay, you didn't do all of it, but you did some of it. Good for you, man. You're one step closer. You can start to feel those like power-ups, right? Those affirmations from other folks. And enlisting help of your loved ones and your friends really can help you remember, hey, even in spite of the fact that I feel just like a failure, total defeat in all this, I lost my car, I lost my jobs, I lost my side hustle, I lost what, blah, 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 blah. The connection with one another really can be the difference between feeling like you've made a difference today or, you know, you're just kind of stuck in a rut. And here's the good news. If you stayed home and did nothing else today, at least you didn't give anybody COVID. So we're already one step closer just by virtue of you being you. So I like that. And then the idea of identifying the bad guys too, right? Like when you have moments in your life that you're like, I'm just feeling it's Magneto or it's the Sentinels or it's the, whatever the bad guys happen to be in the X-Men universe on any given day, just jotting those things down. What makes you feel like I'm not good about that anymore? I was good until I started checking social media, or I was good until I, I was blindly watching TV, or I was doom scrolling on my phone, or I put on Netflix and it said, hey, are you still watching? And identifying who those bad guys are, at a certain point, you either figure out how to adapt and overcome to crush those bad guys. Hey, I feel bad every time I eat ice cream at 10 o'clock at night. Or you recognize that you can do those things, tackle those bad guys, but on your home turf. So you kind of reposition it. Maybe instead of ice cream at 10 p.m., you say, I'm going to do ice cream today, but I'm going to do it at 6. Or I'm going to give myself permission to say, it's just grapes today, or whatever it is as my dessert. Maybe some avocado ice cream, borrowed from Tom Brady there, right? So I like this idea of using people in your life, not in a negative way, but in a positive way, to affirm, to encourage, to inspire, and hold you accountable. And the idea of feeling super better in times where we feel super bad. And I think that's a great idea. You know, envision yourself as a hero, right? Figure out who your hero squadron is around you. Set up those daily affirmations, figure out where those bad guys are, and figure out how your power-ups can get you out of those tough, bad spaces. Hey, look, I didn't get published in an online publication. That sucks. On the bright side, it only took me one day's worth of work, and I lost about $15. Well, $15 is the cost of 2 or 3 cups of, whatever at Starbucks. It's not the worst thing in the world, and it's only one day's worth of loss. So that someone could say to me, hey, so what? I thought it was funny. I thought your piece was really good. And we're on to the next thing. There are other publications. There are other pieces. You have the ability to write. Keep at it, right? Okay, the book was turf. The book was, just not the right idea, and you have to do it again. Well, you didn't lose anything by putting that time in. You learned from that. You can say, okay, I can adapt those strategies. And for example, the Legos thing, I could do a whole book about digital adaptation strategies for manipulatives. Now, it's not the book I thought I'd be writing, but if I really wanted to sit down and do it, well, darn it, I clearly can write. I clearly have these skills. It's just putting the time in. So I think that's really important. Now, the car, of course, is a frustration, but things about that, when you can kind of put in perspective, hey, there are things I can control and the things that I can't, you start to say, well, it's part of the human experience. Cars die. It happens. Cars run out of gas, you know? Relationships break up. People, unfortunately, pass away. These things suck, but they are part of life. Putting yourself in a position that says, hey, I am suffering, but I am no different than other human in the fact that I am suffering. And in fact, that gives me more empathy, like plus one empathy, plus one power up, right? You're starting to feel your skill of this sucks, but it's making me more broadly prepared for this human experience of being a better teacher, being a better student, being a better professional, and ultimately being a better person in the whole long run. So some thoughts about adaptation and the coming over failure. If you want to check out Jane McConnell's book, it's called Reality is Broken. It's about how games and gamification really can fix the world. And it's good. And I like the idea of that super better game is a fun, small, stupid example of something that we could really enjoy when we kind of lean in on ways to see power-ups in our own lives and ways to kind of set those plans incrementally rather than they're just so darn big and we feel like we can't get anything done. In the meantime, stay safe, stay home, wear a mask. If you're going back to school, I'm right there with you. I'm trying to figure out all that stuff out too. Terrified. But control what you can. Super better, one day at a time. Check out Super Better on the internet. I think you can use the hashtag Super Better on Twitter, see other people's examples of it. Or you can just search for Super Better in Jane McGonigal. Like I said, wear a mask, stay safe, stay home. God bless, and we'll see you next Monday. Thanks again.